All right. Welcome everyone to the May 24th, 2022 VC Verifiable Credential API call. Our agenda is here. On the agenda today is just a lot of issue processing. Basically, we're going to talk a bit about revocation lists, supported crypto suites for issuer endpoints, issuer being optional. This has a lot to do just with the issuer API endpoint, unsupported issuers and things of that nature. Any other updates or changes to the agenda before we get started? Okay. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, just been a couple weeks. Just want to give a quick update on where the use cases team is at. So we're still in the process of reviewing the sequence diagrams. As part of that, it became necessary for me and Joe to reach out to the original authors. So it's taking a little bit longer than I had originally hoped, but we're through the first three use cases, I think, for at least a second pass. We'll be continuing with the next three. So if you wrote one of those, you will probably be hearing from either me or Joe via email, just with any questions that came up. And I think the way it's feeling to me is after we're done with that review with the authors, that'll be the right time to bring those back to the group, and they'll be at least somewhat stable at that point. So going to be another couple weeks, I think, for that, but that's where we're at.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thank you, Eric, for the update, and thank you for continuing to work on that. Okay, so I guess our kind of action from that is just you're going to let us know when you have them updated.
Yeah.
Also, I know that there's a, you know, you've got a, kind of a, there's a bug with the mermaid diagram renderer thing. I am going to be unable to get to that for probably about 3 weeks or more. So my apologies. But it shouldn't, it just makes it a little uglier. It doesn't, it just puts more vertical space than I think we'd like. And there's some weird CSS things that are going on with it.
Yeah, it's mostly a white space issue. So okay. Nothing functional that I've found.
Okay, great. Okay, well, let's go ahead and go into kind of we are kind of in announcements and, introductions. Anyone new to the call? Anyone would like to introduce themselves or reintroduce themselves? See, Anane is new. I don't know if you'd like to provide an intro background on you. It's fine if you don't and just want to stay quiet. Okay. I think the rest of us all know each other. We've been on these calls for a while. Any announcements other than the use cases one we just heard from? Okay, if not, we can go ahead and get into the agenda. Before we do that, apologies, I have not. Oh, well, I guess it's for those of you that might have missed the CCG weekly call. Anane just introduced themselves. Can't do a mic right now, but just joined W3C. Wonderful. Welcome, and welcome to the group. As many of you know, the charter vote for the Verifiable Credentials Working Group and the Dataset Canonicalization Working Group's out right now. I've been prodding a couple of W3C members, and at this point, it looks like we have the minimum votes necessary. for a working group to be created. I can't say the numbers because those are, I think, member confidential, but we're doing pretty well with, you know, a week to go for the verifiable credentials one and 2 weeks left in the vote for the RDF dataset canonicalization stuff. So that's going well. Okay, on to our issues. All right, the first one up is, should this API define how to host revocation lists? This is issue 232 and was brought up by Ori. Actually, let me go ahead and share my screen here. So we've got... Okay. So Ori asked the question... currently revocation list 2020 and the status list 2021 stuff, assumes that the list is hosted somewhere. The VC API provides no way of obtaining that credential, the list. So the question is, should the VC API, define how to host revocation lists. Marcus, I believe you said it's out of scope. So maybe we could start with your position, Marcus, and then we can kind of go from there.
So I don't fully remember this, but I think I think my idea was that a revocation list is something that's specific to one type of revocation mechanism or one credential status mechanism. And so it felt strange to me to define something that's specific to one mechanism and not universally applicable. But I don't completely remember the issue, to be honest.
All right. Thanks. Go ahead, Dave.
So I think there were some later comments on this issue about trying to reduce the having the verifier contact the issuer or hit an endpoint generally to try and increase privacy. One of the things that's in the design for revocation lists is to express them as credentials, and that would allow a verifier to request, when they're requesting it, whatever credential they're requesting, they could also request the revocation list credential at the same time, which would allow the holder to pull that information directly from the issuer, and they can keep a cached copy or do whatever it is they want to. Presumably, this VC would have to be fresh enough per the whatever the verifier requires, but they could respond to a VPR and include the revocation list credential along with whatever credential uses it. And that would be another way to handle the privacy preserving aspect of this.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, for both the revocation and the refresh, I think there was a sense, at least I believe I advocated for it, that these are points of extensibility, but we should probably have one example, so that people can see how the whole stack works together. Like, I think a lot of people don't understand how you can do revocation at all without the phone home problem. So I think I had a sense that there was some agreement that it would be good to have at least one example of both those mechanisms in scope for us to figure out.
Thank you, Joe. Any other thoughts on this item? Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I think it's kind of just echoing what Joe was just saying, but I was thinking it'd be, if we do want to support this, very nice to have a use case because currently I don't think any of the identified use cases call out revocation in any way. So if we could either work it into one of the existing ones, or if someone could write a good example of a revocation use case that would make use of this, that would probably be helpful in framing whether or not it is in or out of scope for us.
Okay, so let's see. We do have, well, yeah, right. So all that's good stuff. We do have, I think the hesitation in the beginning was this is an extension point and we don't need to define it. Let's get the core API, down and figured out. Since then, status list 2021, status list 2021 spec, exists, and there is, thought there was, maybe there isn't. It's the credential refresh, isn't it? That's the flow that we have. Refresh. PC refresh 2021 is the thing that exists. And I think we have like a protocol flow here. But we don't have a protocol flow for example, a protocol flow example for, status list 2021, I guess. Okay. So what are the next steps here? We need to, where should we detail this? So should we detail this in status list 2021 and then point to that as an example of revocation? Or should we put this one thing of how you do revocation in scope for the VC API? Noting that there's another argument that we should put this in scope for the verifiable credential base spec, like the data model stuff. So the three options are, at least three options are put it in the VC spec, but then we can only just talk about data model, put it in the VC API spec as the one normative way of doing status and revocation, or keep it in a separate spec and point to it from the VC API specification. Thoughts on those three options?
I would think it's going to end up being a combination of those things. Sorry, I didn't jump on queue. Go ahead, guys.
Go ahead, Joe.
My sense of the VC API, and I obviously we're still teasing out scope here, that's the fundamental question, was that it's wherever you need an endpoint for exchanging VCs or managing VCs, and it seems like both refresh and revocation are part of that set. We just haven't formalized them very well. So I'd question why isn't that endpoint part of the spec? If it's one of the endpoints we use to manage VCs, would be my question.
Marcus, you're up.
So, Manu, didn't you recently argue that these test suites should be more modular? And we're not talking about test suites, right? We're just talking about the API specification. Because I remember in the test suites, you argued that those should be more modular, right? And there's now a separate test suite for DeepKey, and then there's a test suite for ED25519-2020, and those are not part of the main VC API test suite anymore. So I'm wondering if that would be an argument for also making this more modular and not make it part of the main, the main API specification. Because, like you said, it's an extension point. But I'm not sure. Just a thought. Thinking about these recent new test suites.
Yes, certainly. My preference would be to keep them separate and modular. There's a tension here, right? I mean, they're good arguments on either side. The argument for, well, so, okay, so first of all, Marcus, I think you're right. There's this argument for modularity, and there is a way to break this stuff down so all these things are in different test suites. So there's not one monolithic VCA API test suite. There's just kind of a super focused core test suite, and then test suites for crypto suites and status mechanisms and refresh mechanisms and all those extension points. So one way we could approach the work is basically say, there are test suites for all the extension points for a VC, and the VC API has to define the basic endpoints for doing those things. And I think it does today. Like the exchanges stuff, I believe supports the refresh, credential refresh. So we've got that in the VC API spec. And then the status list stuff is just any random URL out on the internet can hold the status list or the status list credentials. And so managing those things is really kind of a back-end task for the issuer. The issuer is the thing that manages those URLs and does things with them. All things considered, it feels like keeping these things as modular specifications, modular test suites, and then pointing to them from the VC API as the one example, Joe. So if we want to provide examples, we can say, if you want an example of how to use XYZ API or how to do credential refresh, or how to do status lists, here is a normative specification that you can go off and read. At least that would be my preference. Go ahead, Dave.
I agree with a lot of that. One other thing I want to bring up is that there's been a number of people in the VC in the run up to getting a second VC working group. They've mentioned how while we have extension points, it would be really good for interoperability for any one of these extension points to have one working mechanism, that people can be pointed to. And while I agree, we want to try and keep things modular, it would be good to figure out a way to deal with that tension as well. And the other thing is, there may be some additional work that needs to happen with the VC API to enable more privacy preserving checking of, the revocation list. And so there might be a piece of, for example, the verifier API might need to be able to accept, the revocation list credential whenever party hits that endpoint to verify a VC, it might need to optionally be able to send the list so it doesn't have to be fetched by the verifier API. And that would be something that would go into the VC API test suite.
See, I put myself on the queue, but forgot why. It was the front end of your comment, Longley. The point is, people have been saying, hey, it would be good to have, you have all these extension points, you need to define at least one normative way of doing it. I think we can do that. We can keep things modular and do that, by effectively, pointing in a normative way to say, you must support status list 2021, for example, and then point to the spec, right? Cause specs do that all the time. They point to other specs in a very normative way and say, you must, support X, Y, and Z spec. So that's my suggestion. If, you know, to keep things modular, we can keep things modular. And we can point normatively, in the VC spec to say, this is the one way of, you have to at least implement this revocation mechanism, or you have to at least specify this, status list, mechanism or credential refresh mechanism. The concern I have is the sheer amount of work, that might generate for us, where we have to move all those things into normative, all at the same time, in inevitably, someone is going to show up with, an arguably more privacy preserving mechanism, right? And then there'll be a big fight over, all right, which one, you know, should we use? And again, there's a trade-off there. If you pick one thing, then you improve interop. But you also potentially take other things the working group could have done in the meantime off the table that might have been, you know, more important. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, going that. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I don't think we need to go so far as to say that you must implement this particular mechanism. But I think what people were looking for minimally was, if you're going to use this extension point, here is one normative way that you can use that extension point. And I think that's different from telling people that they must implement statusless 2021. Instead, it's if you're going to use the credential status feature in the VCWG data model, here is one normative way that it's done if you want to use that.
All right, plus one to that. See, Joe gave a thumbs up as well. Okay, so what is the proposal here? That we don't define how to host revocation lists with the VC API, but we do point to a specification that does that. And the desire there is to say that there is a normative way to do that. Here's how you would do that. And here's how, and that specification says how you use, well, that specification specifies the protocol on how you do that. Is that what we're saying? Go ahead, Lonely.
I think so, with one addition, which is we need to say, that other spec might also define a hook into the VC API for sending a revocation list credential to the verifier.
Yeah, noting that it's super dangerous to do that unless you're using a herd privacy mechanism like status list 2021, and even then that's frowned upon. Like, ideally, it's the holder delivering that status list credential. And there isn't a direct verifier to issuer communication.
To be clear, that is the purpose of this. The holder fetches it, hands that to the verifier. The verifier hits the VC verifier API with that copy that came from the holder.
I see. Okay.
That way they avoid pulling it from the issuer directly from the revocation list endpoint.
Okay. In the spec that should say that is the credential status 2021 spec?
Yeah, it would be the first version of a spec saying, of an extension spec saying what the VC API, verifier API needs to be able to accept. And so we might also need a section in the VC API. We need an extension point for the verifier so that credential status mechanisms can create these kinds of extensions. It's effectively a way to forward information from the holder to the verifier API. So it's, I hate to use the word bucket, but it's sort of a bucket for credential status metadata or information that a verifier that understands how to apply a particular revocation method or status check method can use.
I missed that last part. Where would that?
So when you're making a call to verify a verifiable presentation or a verifiable credential, you would include additional credential status information. And in the case of statusless 2021, that would be, you can optionally include the status list credential itself.
In the presentation. You're saying in the presentation?
We might want it to be an option that rides along with the presentation. So you send the presentation, you also send options. In those options today, you include like a challenge and some other information. And we would want a section on for credential status data. And you would send the revocation list credential or the status list credential as an option for the verifier to use.
Okay, I see. So that you're talking about in like the VP request spec, we would do that.
There's two pieces.
Yeah, this. It would be in the presentation, right?
Well, the VP presentation request would ask for a status list credential along with what other credentials you're providing. The holder would provide that information to the verifier app. I'm not sure if I'm using the right terminology still. The app would turn around and send the credentials from the presentation. Yeah, I guess it would end up being, so we have to work through the details here, but it might end up that that credential is in the presentation itself. But, what we want to have happen at the verifier service is it knows to pull out the revocation credential from that presentation and use it instead of fetching it directly.
Right. Okay. Okay. So what's the plan here? We are going to, when the topic of, if there's a, there is going to be a topic about, you know, revocation in the spec, or we should talk about it, and we should say, hey, if you want to do revocation, here's a normative way of doing it. And then we point to whatever the most popular, you know, mechanism is that day. Let's just say it's like credential status 2021. And in the credential status 2021 spec, the data model's defined, the API ground management's defined, and we're expecting large chunks of it to be dependent on the VC API or side effects from the VC API. And then there may be other instructions in there on how to use the herd privacy credential, how a holder can prefetch it, and how a verifier can ask for it if the holder has it, and how the holder can deliver it to the verifier if they know how to get it, you know, from the issuer. So it would require both the verifier and the holder to understand that each other supports this delivery feature. And if they don't support that, then, for example, the verifier can just go out to the issuer and fetch it. And the holder is still protected by herd privacy when that happens. Did I summarize that plan correctly?
That sounded right to me.
Okay. Would anyone object to that plan or have concerns around that plan, Joe?
I'm thinking. What gave me pause is your language here that the verifier just goes to the issuer, which is generally a pattern we have not been embracing.
Yeah, and that's why I hesitated a bit when Dave first said that, because I know that people might look at that and go like, we are never supposed to do that. And in some cases, it's kind of sort of okay, like in the herd privacy case, right? Status List 2021 was designed for that, being the way people would just default to doing it, with the more complex protocol that Longley just outlined being the best practice, right? But we know that some implementers are lazy and, well, I don't know if that's a good argument, but, you know, implementers can be lazy and they're going to do the thing with the path of least resistance, and we have to at least protect the holder in those cases. And then the hope is that we can, put a spotlight right on there being a better way to do this in the future and, you know, make that something that wallets compete on, is we're being better about the way we.
Right. So if our intention is what you just described, then I think we should have stronger language than verifier just goes to the issuer, and should be something along the lines of, the verifier should use a privacy respecting mechanism, or something that avoids phone home, right? We should, I think we should have a should in there. about a privacy respecting mechanism rather than language that some people will see that, oh, they can just contact the issuer and they'll go build that workflow. So.
Yeah. I mean, we could go as far as basically saying you should not, the verifier should not, contact, the issuer, and should, use this other privacy preserving mechanism where the holder delivers the credential to the verifier.
Yeah. As long as we can get shoulds in there, I understand that it can't be a must because, there are use cases that, that need that. But should do it through a privacy respecting intermediary layer is, I think, important.
Okay. All right. Any concerns or objections to that from the group? Good, go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick one. So I guess this means that the holder would have to have, basically would have to communicate with the verifier more often in order to get the more up-to-date version of the status list. Now that it's, now that, you know, we're not relying on just the verifier being able to just update whatever is hosted at that link. Now we have to kind of have a way for the holder to then make sure that they're, you know, constantly in sync with the verifier. So like, is there other thoughts on how frequently that that should be happening? Just putting that out there.
Go ahead, Dave.
I think that's going to be a matter of policy for the verifier, and wallets are going to have to be responsive. They're going to look at, ideally they would look at a VPR that would have that information in there that says the credential needs to be at least this fresh, and the wallet would need to go fetch it if it did not have a cached version that was that fresh. And because it's really going to be the verifier's policy. We can suggest time frames in the spec, but it's going to be a business rule.
Fair enough. Thanks.
All right, one second while I type this up. So the proposal is to talk about status revocation in the VC API and point to a normative status revocation mechanism from the spec. The spec that is pointed to as a concrete example of how to implement the feature. The spec that is pointed to should contain the, all the data models and the protocols required to implement the replication mechanism, as well as guidance to maximize privacy when possible. Ideally, the verifier should not contact the issuer to check status information and should get that status information from the holder. APR to implement this is welcome. It's in the VC API and status list mechanism is welcome. Okay, so I think this one's ready for PR. Any other thoughts before we move on to the next thing? All right. That was a good, solid discussion on this item. Thank you, everyone. Okay. Next item up. These should start getting easier in theory. Okay, so does the issuer API, the issuer API does not expose issuer identifiers and supported crypto suites. This kicked off a long discussion between Ori and Dave, and Marcus chimed in as well. It also spread into other repositories and the traceability work. From what I remember, this kind of sort of has to do with discovery and whether or not we need it. I think the current set of conversations we've had in the group have basically said that they're going to be issuer URL endpoints, just base endpoints that are configured with very specific credentials in very specific crypto suites and very specific issuer IDs. And those are not optional things that are sent anymore. Or rather, implementations can provide kind of options to switch those things up, but one way of addressing the complexity here, the end by end complexity here, is to just make it so that issuer endpoints are locked into a very specific issuer crypto suite and possibly credential. Okay, so thoughts on that from folks that are implementing. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of creating specific configurations on issuer software that are bound to as narrow a set of things, eliminating an optionality as much as possible, ideally completely. So the way I'm imagining these things to work is a party that wants to be able to issue credentials using the issuer API creates a new issuer instance, which has the configuration, has a configuration that they want to support at that endpoint. That would be a crypto suite or a status list or a credential status mechanism. If they're using Zcaps, for example, they would provide Zcaps to allow access to use a certain key to sign the credentials. They might also use OAuth credentials to provide access to particular keys for signing, something along those lines. And once you create that configuration, using that endpoint should not require sending any kind of options. And so when you post to that endpoint, you send the credential you want to have issued. And if that's a supported credential, I think I missed this. You would also want to configure the credential types that are supported at that endpoint. If you send something that's valid for that configuration, then you get issued an appropriate credential. I just don't think responding to this discoverability concept, I just don't think that it makes sense to have an API where a client could iterate over all the issuers provided at an endpoint, find one that has a configuration that they like, and then just send something to it, presuming that they even have the credentials to hit that endpoint. I don't think that really matches. I don't know what use case that matches, and I don't think it really makes any sense to do it that way. I think that applications and things are going to be, the process for setting up an application for issuing credentials is going to be to create an issuing configuration and then add that to your software and hit that endpoint whenever you want to issue something.
Go ahead, Joe.
It seems to me that I think I'm with Dave. I mean, it's the issuer app which will be talking to the issuer service, and that issuer app is the one who has encoded the business logic, is written to drive that service endpoint. It knows what that service is doing on behalf of the app. Like, that was part of standing up the whole system. So I'm not understanding the use case in which the issuer app would need to do some sort of discovery, because the issuer service was configured to support the app. So it seems to me it's a configuration time thing and not an interactive thing.
Yeah. Plus one to that. all that makes a lot of sense to me. I think the concern I have is that Ori's not here and Mike Varley's not here to argue why they feel like Discovery is, you know, such a strong, you know, use case for them. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I agree. It would be good to get their feedback again, but my feeling is that original design came out of, creating a system that's going to work with a test suite, and it made writing test suites easier. But a whole lot of things were relaxed and didn't, you know, don't really match real world use cases with a test suite. I think creating a demo site or a test suite site that anyone can hit, it will sign with any key, you know, and then you provide your configuration options was a really good way to quickly bootstrap showing some of the features of this API. But when you get down to real world use cases, it's not going to ever function that way. And I think we just need to modify how we would go about, you know, doing the test suites where you provide specific configurations for the specific tests that you want to run. And that matches how you would also set up applications in the real world.
All right. Any other input on this item? So the original issue was the issuer API does not expose issuer identifiers and supported crypto suites. The argument is yes, and it doesn't need to. The end. Close the issue.
Hi, so, Manu. This is Andy from OneEdTech.
Yeah, please go ahead, Andy.
Just as a little context, I don't know. I don't have any input on that specific the way the issue is specifically worded, but I do. I did want to share that we have two specifications that support dynamic client registration. That's LTI and Open Badges. And the use case there, the scenario is that in the case of an Open Badges one, that you have your badges hosted somewhere, you've been collecting them on what we call a host, which would probably more be called a wallet these days. But you want to move them. Yeah, I want to move them to this other service that I have come across, or I just prefer for some reason. And with dynamic client registration, if both sides support that, then the application I'm using can reach out and discover the endpoint that this other host that I want to move to, what it supports, and can facilitate the actual exchange of all the registration information that's needed for authorization, and then start the actual process of helping you move your badges over to this new host. So it's really the use case for us in both cases is where a person wants to do something with their data, move it to a different, or use it or move it to a different application that the current platform is not aware of yet. And they don't want to go through the whole, they in fact can't go through that whole process, or there's no easy way to go through the whole process of getting the two platforms to talk to, you know, talk to each other, call each other on the phone, exchange email, blah, 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 blah. This facilitates all of that, and it can happen almost instantly. Oh, and by the way, dynamic registration uses then the service discovery as part of it.
I don't have a way of joining the queue. I'd like to join.
All right. Justin, you're on right after Dave, who's on the queue. I will add you. Plus Justin. Thank you, Andy. That is super helpful. Service discovery. Dave, you're up next.
Right. So, I just do want to quickly respond to what Andy said, and then I was on the queue for a different reason. I would say Andy's use case is a really important one, but it does not fall under the issuer API, because I don't think that the way that use case was described does not involve having all of your badges reissued. And I don't know that you would even be able to do that, because you would have to contact each individual issuer. You can't just ask some other service to sign all of your badges over. So I think what you're really talking about there is, as you mentioned, you have this concept of a host or a holder, a wallet, and you want to move your existing badges to a different location to have those stored. I think that's a totally valid use case, but not related to what the issuer API is going to do. And the comment I got on the queue to make was, I wanted to tweak what you said, Manu. It's not that we're going to say we don't need to express any configuration information at these endpoints. It's that I think it's fine to create a get endpoint for any one of these configurations, so that any party that's able to access that endpoint can load and see what the configuration information is. But we don't need to do that in support of some kind of discovery API. And nor do we need to make it so that these endpoints are highly optional. So I think it's totally fine to have an API where you create a configuration, and if you call get on it later as some party that's authorized to hit that endpoint, you could find out what that configuration information is. But that's the use case there is not to browse an endpoint, a bunch of issuer instances, and pick one and hope that you can issue something.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Justin, you're up.
Yeah, so I just wanted to point out one support for what Andy is discussing in terms of his use case, and two, just to point out that the arguments that Dave is making are ultimately punting the registration and discovery questions down to another step. And that has a benefit to cases which do have a static configuration, of which there are many, and many reasonable, practical ones out there. But the ability to have machine-readable parameters for engaging with the system really, you can't downplay that and pretend that the only way that people are going to use it is in this open world blank slate where I don't know anything about you, so I'm just going to go through this entire catalog and hope I find something that matches. Because what's really going to happen realistically is that you'll have a handful of things that you can do, and a system that you're trying to talk to, and you're trying to find the overlap of that for right now. And while yes, if you can facilitate that with automation, that is usually a good thing. I will also point out that this is not really in conflict with Dave's idea of having an instance of this be locked down to a particular set of parameters. It does, however, all that does, though, is push this question to some other endpoint that hasn't been defined, that gives you a list of different configurations that you can go through.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
So good points all around. Go ahead, Dave, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I wanted to a certain extent agree with what Justin said. It's if we wanted to, I think the way that this would work, if people wanted to, in a machine-driven way, create these configurations, the way it would work would not be that they would search for an existing configuration they can use, is they would hit an endpoint on the issuer service that would list all of the possible, all the supported features of that issuing platform. And then they would use that to create their own configuration from that dynamically and then use it. And I think that's all, that all matches, that all lines up with my view of the system. And I think that matches what Justin says.
Yes. What you've just described is discovery.
Right. And it's, but it's, the thing that we were missing before, I think, was we were trying to fit that into a box where you would look at existing configurations, and pick and choose one. And, instead what we want to do, is discovery of all possible features that aren't that aren't bound to something. So, and I think what's key here is we don't want to get a list of all the features and then choose all those options and send them to some particular endpoint, because that does not, what we've discovered is that does not work with, we know that these endpoints need to be stateful in some way, especially if they're going to be doing status lists and revocation mechanisms and so on. And so it's important that we have this step where you're creating the configuration that it has some level, some kind of state associated with it and then reusing it. And so, I think what's key is breaking these things apart so that what we're, I guess what was confusing to people was what we are discovering. We're not discovering an existing configuration we can use. We're discovering the features that are available on the issuing system so that we can create a configuration to use it.
All right. So where do we go from here? The original issue was that the issuer API does not expose issuer identifiers in supported crypto suites. I think what Dave is saying is, it could publish a static configuration. By doing so, you are not invalidating the whole dynamic registration kind of discovery use case. And I think what Justin and Andy are saying is that, don't punt that use case down the road because there are legitimate use cases there. We will end up needing some form, and some form of discovery will be useful in the future, because we've seen this happen before in other systems. Is that a fair summary?
I would just nitpick on some of the terminology there. I think what's being published is the list of features that can be used to create a valid configuration or issuer instance. And then you can use that issuer instance once it's been created to issue credentials.
Okay. Justin, Andy, any concerns about that? Like, is that so far off?
My only concern is that to adopt Dave's language, it would need to point to an issuer instance creation API definition in order for that to make any sense and be interoperable.
Would it be enough to point to an issuer instance configuration data model, like I'm just making this up, but like /issuer/1/config, and then saying the config has to follow this data model? It's just like a JSON key value pairs on this is the issuer and this is the crypto suite and this is the revocation mechanism. Is that the minimum bar that would need to be hit, Justin?
My understanding of what Mike Farley and Avast need, I believe so. That is at least required for that use case. Unfortunately, with Mike not on the call, I do not speak authoritatively for them. I think that that's at least a good start. Make sure Mike gets tagged so he can chime in.
Okay, so let's try that.
I'll bring this up with him when I meet with him later this week too.
Okay, thanks, Justin. All right, so let's try that. The current proposal is to expose a configuration for an issuer endpoint and note the issuer ID, crypto suite, allowable credentials, revocation mechanism, and other relevant details to provide the basis for discovery for that endpoint. It is unknown currently how that particular configuration endpoint is discovered. That is for another issue. So a PR describing the issuer endpoint configuration is welcome, which may or may not overlap with the discovery endpoint that VAST provided. Any concerns about that being the path forward? Any pushback on that?
My only pushback is it's conflating a little bit the clean separation that we've brought to light on the call. So we have two different things going on. We haven't decided whether or not we want to create an endpoint that exposes the features that are available on an issuing system. But if you wanted to do dynamic configuration creation, you would hit that endpoint first and then decide to create a configuration from that. And then what we have here with the current proposal to expose a configuration is that part's fine, but we're not going to be ever, I don't think, discovering that particular configuration. You created that configuration following your discovery of features that the issuer system provides.
I know that we're in time, Joe. I see your hand up, and Justin, you're unmuted, and we got to let people go. So how about this? We are going to continue this discussion in the issue. And I'll just say I'll tag Mike Varley, and we'll try to get further here. This was a good discussion here today for this particular issue. Was suggested that a but there were concerns looking to Dave Longley, Mike Varley, Justin, and others to continue the discussion here. Okay. All right. Then that's that for that one. Got some good data. Okay, that's it for the call today. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I am going to be on travel for the next 2 weeks, so if you would like to volunteer to run this call, please let me know. And if not, we just won't have the calls. Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll see you at some point in the future. Ciao.
Cheers.